WWIB, it's coming up on quarter to 6, 31 degrees. It's time for the best 5 minutes of the day here on the WIB Wake Up Show. And as we arrive at that, we say good morning to Jason Cans. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm at the short end of burning the candle at both ends. High school basketball in Chippewa last night, so get to bed like 10:30 and did not want to get up this morning. And so we had a listener yesterday who requested, who said, hey, I'd love to hear what Letters to the Beloved says about the Christmas story. So I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And last year we focused on it so much and we have tried to do some Advent things for a couple of years here together. And I think this year I thought, you know, people get that from so many other places that I didn't feel as required, but we're going to take that up here. But I brought a copy of Letters to the Beloved and I'm frantically searching beforehand going, where is it? So I trust you have one as we look to Luke chapter...
I do.
Two, right? Luke chapter two?
Yeah. Sure, we can, John. That's certainly the one I think many of us know, maybe from church and probably from the Charlie Brown Christmas special.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I was looking as we were getting ready to go on, and the Christmas story in this book is in Letters to the Beloved is about 12 pages long.
Mm.
I wrote a lot about this, so
I'm just going to pause before you do it, because now flashing in my mind where I brought some books. Basically, I brought Jesus and Middle Eastern Eyes today to share with, because it's got a different take too, and he raises the question that the word stable is never in the scriptures to challenge the belief that people have about this. But anyhow, that manger was in the house. The manger was in the house there. But anyhow, yeah, it's like on a bookshelf in my area. So if you all of a sudden set things someplace that you weren't, all of a sudden you can fake yourself out. Okay, yes, Luke chapter 2 from Letters to the Beloved. Give us a little taste here.
Yeah. Sure. It says, all of these events happened in real places and in real time. A Christmas story is no mere fairy tale, but true truth. Luke carefully researched the good news, writing a detailed account giving enough information that those who wanted to verify it for themselves would be able to do so. The Christmas story took place when the Roman Emperor Caesar Augustus sent out a mandate that the Roman Empire should count every person. It happened around the time of Quirinius's governorship of Syria. Rome required every person to go to the town of their family's origin, so Joseph needed to travel from Nazareth to Galilee, where he lived, to Bethlehem in Judea, the city of David. Because Joseph traced his lineage to David, the census required him to register there. The trip involved a 90-mile walk, a challenging journey in the best of conditions, but Mary was also pregnant, adding to their difficulty. Her pregnancy did not excuse them from the registration requirement, so they went. Yet this was also fulfilling prophecy. The prophet Micah wrote, "But you, O Bethlehem Ephrathah, who are too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to be ruler in Israel, whose coming forth is from old, from ancient days." While Joseph and Mary were in Bethlehem, Mary went into labor and gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him in strips of cloth to keep him warm, and she laid him in an animal's feeding trough because there were no rooms to rent. Beloved, understand that there were no hotels on every corner in those days as there are now. When you hear the word inn, Luke was not suggesting a hotel. However, some rooms were available to travelers. As you can imagine, with so many people coming to David's town, resources were scarce. So the young couple and their new son stayed in the animal shelter.
Yeah.
There were shepherds out in the... Do you want me to stop there?
We got to leave a little... We got hardly any time left, so if we're going to talk at all. So,
Sure. Yeah. So that kind of gives a little bit of a flavor, you know. So it kind of goes through and retells the story, and then I offer some commentary on it as we're going through as well.
Yeah. I got to say, Yeah, it's good. It definitely, I got messed with, to be honest with you. Kenneth Bailey, Jesus in Middle Eastern Eyes. I've got the book out there, and I know the traditional way that we kind of perceive it, but when he's just like, Yeah, manger. They had manger. Animals would stay in the house in the Middle East. And so the word stable is not in the Bible. I mean, it's not. And so it just, he's a guest I had on a couple of times. This is only the beginning of a very thick book. And so anyhow, for me then, and it seems like, and yet the story continues to be told. But yeah, there's so much that's fascinating. And again, the coming of God and the details that related to that. So did you feel an extra weight or pressure in terms of trying to translate that, or not translate it, but put it in this devotional commentary?
You know, it was one of those kind of picking at it day by day. And, you know, I think we've become so familiar with the story, and I think you're listening now, there are elements from the original. But, you know, I think there were some pieces like the Magnificat, which is Mary's prayer. I think that was, I like what I did with it, but that, again, that feels really big to me, and wanting to capture it, or the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah, very good. All right, appreciate it, Jason. Thank you for being able to find your copy when I couldn't find mine. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Sure.
All right, there we go. Our buddy Jason Kahn's Letters to the Beloved. Get your copy. It's a devotional commentary in the entire New Testament. It took him 6 years to write. He's got some other fine books that he's done related to the Psalms or the Gospel of John, the works of Larry Crabb. Access him, Kahn's, K-A-N-Z, on Amazon.
Okay, lots of people think men rule the world, and we're not going to argue about that. But when it comes to Christmas, most of the women are driving the tank on the war machine of Christmas. We get it going. We get
I love
decorating.
That description, because that's what it feels like sometimes,
war machine on Christmas.
Grinding towards the finish line. So, but if Christmas were left up to men, how would it be different? Survey. Love these surveys. A third of men say women make too much of a fuss about Christmas. Mm. And if left up to them, they would do a much better job.
Oh, wow.
Well, here are four ways that guys would handle the holidays.
All right. So this comes from a survey. Should I start here? So a quarter of men, 25% of men say, yeah, ditch the turkey. Let's just get steak or get takeout. I don't think that's a horrible idea. Less prep. Get takeout.
Unwrap your dinner like
Less
you
dishes?
Unwrap your presents.
Why not?
Here's another one. Half of the guys wouldn't bother sending Christmas cards.
I'm right there.
Yep. Oh, how about 40% would cancel visits to the in-laws?
Oh, we'd still go.
We'll just stay home and relax.
This is a man's Christmas. So again, from a survey, how men who say they would do Christmas better than their wives if they were in charge of it, how they would do Christmas differently, they say there would be dramatically less spending on gifts.
Okay.
Aw, have a heart, fellas.
I admit I'm doing most of the spending, but also Phil is the beneficiary. Do you know how his clothing, I mean, honestly, if he didn't get the Christmas refresh, he
well,
would
that's
look pretty
thing.
Rough.
I mean, that's when my socks and underwear typically
exactly.
get, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So you're welcome, guys. we're gonna still be in charge of Christmas.
And everybody else is like, they're really glad that the ladies are in charge of Christmas.
Leave it in your hands. It's in very capable hands.
And I think if my husband said, well, I'm going to do Christmas this year, I don't know if I could. I think I'd still be inserting myself saying,
and
you're
this
not
is
doing
the thing.
It right.
I'm not one of those dads who's like, oh, that's what we got them. I'm not. I know. But my wife does a lot of the shopping. And if it were left to me, again, with work and things like that, it probably would be right around now where I would go into panic shopping mode where it's got to, you know, it's not Christmas Eve, but I would start really feeling the stress.
Yeah.
And my wife has been gathering the acorns of presents for weeks
right.
and weeks and weeks. So I'm glad that we're ahead of the game a bit.
It doesn't just happen.
Right.
Thank you, ladies.
All right. So Caleb was out of the studio, but what we had, and Susan just stepped out. So it happens from time to time. But what we had
There's
talked
a lot
about
going on all the time.
Was talking about aging. And so a couple of different aspects to this. One is, I had said to Susan that I said, I've always tried to have, no.
Here's Susan.
Here I am.
We're pretty free about sharing our ages here on this show.
I'm old.
And 34. So Susan's our senior member. I'm been pursued at 57.
We wanted her for the dining discount when we go out for meals as a show.
Caleb's 34. Me and my little grandson's here.
But I said, I tried to maintain, I'm like, you know, mind over matter. Just think young and you'll be young.
Right.
And it just, and 56 and 57 present more challenges with that. Because all of a sudden. Just in a variety of ways. I mean, it could be, and one of the ways I want to call to mind is doing high school basketball with, these are cheaters, or these are reading glasses.
Oh, you're
okay?
Reading glasses.
I mean, you guys
glasses,
know I wear
right.
the glasses to
yeah.
read.
Yeah.
And so, you know, your vision does go. And so I had been thinking, and sometimes the obvious just escapes you. I'd been thinking, oh, you know, I need to get bifocals. My wife had just simply suggested after the last basketball game I did, just slide them down your nose. Then you can see the action with your regular vision, and you can see the copy.
Because that makes you look so totally young to have little glasses.
No, that's the point. It's just, I'm at the scorer's table, and it's they really take care of you. Wonderful seats there at Chai and everything. But, I mean, I felt like Grandpa last night, you know? I mean, this is, and she's like, well, you can get smaller ones. Well,
you kids enjoy the game now.
And yet, I know that Al McCoy is the radio play-by-play guy for Phoenix. I don't know if I told you this recently, Caleb.
No.
Al is 88 years old.
Really? Good
he's
for him.
He's 88 years old and he's still, and I'm like, I love that about broadcasting. I mean, you can keep doing it.
Yes, you can.
And one of the great things about radio is it doesn't matter how you look as long as you give
yes.
a good talk.
Oh, yeah.
So.
All your friends, I mean, they'll right away tell you you have a face for radio. But, I mean, the fact is that, like, our dear beloved Mabel Louise, who is 1 week, or what, about 8 days away from turning 99.
Mm, yep.
She's
and
amazing.
She was on the radio and, you know, 97, 98 years old.
Yes.
And so you can, on and on, you can go.
And she's still, I mean, she looks beautiful.
Yes.
She's
oh, I know.
Got,
we
she
did.
Always, I mean, she looks so pulled together. She's got lipstick on. I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's a beautiful woman inside out. Fun fact about glasses, I remember my friend Greg Kashaba was down doing a clinic in Mexico at a missions, and he, so many people wanted to borrow his glasses, and he realized that's a great thing to bring on a mission trip is reading glasses, because a lot of people don't have those. So that's a little helpful hint if you travel around to a third world country or a second world country, have a few extra pair
donating,
with you.
Yeah, your old ones, absolutely.
Yep.
My pastor, Perry Polnasek at Fellowship Church in Chippewa Falls, actually works in the vision at Marshfield Clinic, the vision department, and he's skilled on that. And a lot of the Touch Twice clinics, he does vision care.
Nice.
And so we've done that in Liberia. So exactly what you're
right.
saying, people being tested, and that's beautiful. I mean, he was just recently in Tanzania and did that. And so... talk about blessing, you know, I mean, because of the lack.
Yes.
And so,
well,
yes,
that's
absolutely.
The thing, again, if folks, whether it's sight or hearing, you know, some of these things that we just absolutely take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
But for those who don't have that, when all of a sudden they can see so much better, so much sharper, so much clearer, or see color or hear so much. It's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. We take these five wonderful senses for granted, don't we?
Do you
we?
Remember but, getting glasses?
Yep.
I do. I remember the first thing I said, I looked at my mom, I said, has everyone been able to see like this the whole time?
See, first world problems.
Yes, honey.
I was really bummed because I didn't want the glasses because they were the huge glasses,
right.
which are now back in style, of course. But
yeah,
as a kid, I didn't want
those
them.
Too. Yeah, you know, just closing it off. Proverbs 30 says, two things I ask of you, Lord. Don't give me. I always forget the order of this. Don't give me too little that I might steal and dishonor you, but don't give me too much that I might forget you.
Right.
And my friends from Liberia, we've agreed that they, you know, we're the too much and they're the too little. And so it is for us, and we're so wealthy here. Mm-hmm. I mean, collectively, comparatively. And so for us to just not forget the Lord amidst that.
Keep sharing. I have great news, everybody.
What is it?
Rocket scientists and brain surgeons are no smarter than you.
That is good news.
I know.
I'm not buying it, though. So tell me more.
They ain't no smarter than me. Sorry, that was a southern accent. That was probably wrong, but I was born in the South, so I can do that. The stereotype is not true. Rocket scientists and brain surgeons are no smarter than you are. Scientists compared the intelligence of 329 aerospace engineers, 72 neurosurgeons, and 18,257 members of the general population. Guess what they found?
What?
Aerospace engineers didn't show differences in any aspects of intelligence.
What are we going to say? You can't say smarter than a rocket scientist.
No, you can't. Well,
I want to still use that. Brain surgery.
We can do it to make them feel better, maybe.
Here's the thing, though. I'm not really sure that I would want to be the one designing those rockets or performing those delicate surgeries. So, well, thank you for complimenting my intelligence, but I think I need the schooling.
See, and, yeah, good one of my favorite point. Movies was October Sky, Homer Hickam, and I
all
mean,
right.
went on to work for NASA. He seemed pretty smart to me. So.
Well, there is one caveat. The neurosurgeons were able to solve problems faster than the general public, but they showed a slower memory recall speed. So while they're doing something, they're good at solving the problem, but then it's like a goldfish. What? I did what?
Well, when? It is interesting, again, how all of our brains, like, you know, there's the intelligence and then there's the different things that we're good at, right? For instance, I remember taking a practice LSAT before when I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, and the non-linear thinking that you need, like all these questions, it's about being able to see them from different angles.
Yeah.
And I wasn't very good at it. But but I mean, it's just, you know, it's not necessarily.
I think you would have been a great lawyer. I mean, I'm glad you're
that's
in radio.
That's what my mom said.
I still think you would have been great.
Especially when I was a teenager.
And you're young yet.
I mean, I know some lawyers. And I think you would have been, you would have been good at just about whatever you, I think you would have been great as a screenwriter or whatever. But, I mean,
Thanks, Mark. The
one time I was in the movie The Lumber Baron and I saw what a director does. And I know, I seriously came back and I'm like, I could see Caleb as a director. So, you know, whatever.
Thought about doing that too. Ended up here.
I've never been told anything like that.
Well, I mean, now though, I mean, maybe I'll go be a brain surgeon.
Maybe.
Yeah, right.
Now that Susan's just given me the impetus to say,
it calls to mind the absent-minded professor, right? And I'm thinking of a really bright university professor in Texas right now, but kind of, and he was a part of an event we were at a couple of years ago down in Houston. But, you know, some simple details like, where is that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so Fred McMurray, I think, played the absent-minded professor, right? And such a great actor, my three sons. So,
well, and Phil is—he's very bright, very good with medicine. But boy, where are the car keys? Who knows?
Yeah, see, exactly.
Who knows?
Yeah. Fearfully and wonderfully made, and unique.